Scene the Teen, A New Start, written by Random Reader 13 and read by Kaber. This is a Mandalorian Batfam crossover fic, rated general audiences, in which no archive warnings apply. It features the relationship between Din and Bruce, Django and Jaster, and everyone and everyone. This is part 4 of Between the Stars. Chapter 1. Dick was sprawled out on his bunk, reading through the latest information Din had gathered about the time they'd found themselves in. They'd slowly been piecing together important information regarding politics and timelines, but it was taking a while, and the information was often scattered or irrelevant. It wasn't like they could just walk up to someone and ask for a quick summary of the past decades of galactic history. They were conspicuous enough in their armor. Though perhaps less conspicuous than in their own time, locals still did double takes at the sight of them. People still treated them with caution and respect, but bartenders and mercenaries were much more casual, giving them a nod instead of stopping their conversations to stare. It gave Dick hope that apparently their numbers grew strong enough that the need to hide was not so pressing. Dick frowned a little at one of Din's notes and scrolled back up, certain he had seen Batarine referenced in someone else's report. If the reports contradicted each other, they'd have to do further research to clarify what was true. Whispering made Dick pause in his search. He glanced up toward the empty doorway. The small, abandoned compound they discovered in the mountains of Takodana wasn't the most comfortable or conducive to privacy. The covert had been close quarters too, but at least there had been doors. But it was isolated and not on any map. They were used to the hard stone floors and the chill of being underground, but some people apparently had forgotten about how well sound traveled in the tunnel-like halls. It took only a few seconds for him to identify Tim and Jason's voices, and a pause in their whispering probably meant Cass was there too. Dick slowly put his data pad down and crept toward the door. His vote plotting together never voted well. "He'll get over it," Jason murmured, after a moment of silence where Cass presumably said something in hand language. "And really, he can't be mad," Tim added. He was using his most reasonable, "listen to me, I'm using logic" voice, which was a sure sign he was about to do something stupid. "We're Mando Ade. Learning how to use weapons is an important part of maintaining the creed." "Aranov," Jason agreed. "What happens if we need to defend ourselves and all that's available is Din's laser sword? Are we supposed to just give up?" Dick stiffened. They couldn't possibly be considering. "Those Dekuti. There was a reason Din kept the laser sword hooked to his belt, and there was a reason he hadn't trained them how to use it himself. He'd never shown such qualms with other weapons, so clearly he didn't want them touching it." "You guys cannot be serious," he hissed, stepping into the hallway. Tim and Jason jumped. Cass smiled and gave him a wave. "You knew he was there?" Jason demanded. Cass tilted her head, unimpressed. Cass always knew when people were around. "Why didn't you tell us?" Jason amended. "He's gonna criff it all up." "Hey," Dick protested. "Am I wrong?" Jason shot back. "Didn't you come out here to stop us?" Dick scowled, folding his arms. He had, but he wasn't about to admit that. "I already told Steph and Damien to meet us in the courtyard," Tim said, tapping on his vambrace. "Evident," Jason started, but Tim cut him off. "It's a disappearing message. There'll be no evidence I sent it." Dick put his hands on his hips. "How are you even going to get it?" "Buir is sleeping and Din's getting ready to give Grogu a bath, which we all know means he'll take off his armor and be distracted for at least an hour, Tim reported. That was true. Grogu really loved baths. They were a relatively rare occurrence. Due to a lack of time, space, and access to water, Grogu was usually stuck getting scrubbed with a wet cloth or put in the sonic, so none of the elite begrudged him his fun. Plus, as much as Din sighed about the production, everyone knew he loved watching Grogu splash around. Cass is going to sneak in and grab the laser sword. We'll have some test runs with it, and we'll put it back before he even notices, Tim concluded. Dick surveyed them all, noting the stubborn glint in their eyes, and sighed. I guess if you're going to do it anyway, there should be some adult supervision. Jason scoffed, Cass tilted her head judgmentally, and Tim rolled his eyes. Sure, Jason said. Keep telling yourself that. After a moment where Jason and Dick just scowled at each other, Cass rolled her eyes. The head movement they used to convey the expression through their bouche made the unhelmeted version very dramatic, and sent them a quick wave before gliding down the hall, feet unfairly silent on the echoing stone. The rest of them headed in the opposite direction, taking the longer way around the half-circle of tunnels so they wouldn't pass by Din's door and risk getting his attention while Cass was in the middle of her infiltration. That meant, of course, they had to sneak past Bruce's room instead, but Bruce was a little bit of a heavier sleeper than Din, and they made it to the courtyard without any trouble. Dick unhooked his bouche from his belt and pulled it on before hauling the door open. The doors on either side of the tunnels were the only ones in the compound. They blended in well with the rock and were heavy enough to make Dick wonder if they were actually stone themselves. He stepped outside, automatically scanning the surrounding areas and flipping through his different sensors to make sure there was no one nearby. Thankfully, they all came back empty. Steph and Damien were already waiting in the middle of the courtyard. Damien was doing a very bad job of hiding his excitement, and Steph wasn't even bothering, bouncing on her toes and radiating a grin so strong, Dick could practically see it through her bouche.
I want dibs,
Steph called as soon as they were in earshot. Tim squawked in outrage, and Damien immediately started protesting.
I think, Jason said loudly, that seeing how you all try to poison me, I should get to go before you guys.
There was a moment of silence. Dick put his hands on his hips. On one hand, that was a low blow. On the other hand, so was a threatening to poison Jason. Steph was immediately cowed, folding her arms across her stomach and looking away. Tim's stance still looked annoyed, but he cringed and backed down. Damien, on the other hand, clenched his hands into fists.
You cannot hold that against us forever,
he complained.
It's been like 3 months. Enough,
Dick stepped in.
I will be using it first.
He raised a hand to cut off their protests.
I'm the oldest, and I also have the best instincts for new weapons, and you guys know it.
His instincts had saved his life many times over, whether it was realizing they were walking into a trap or being able to use new weapons quickly. He knew it was years of training and his senses picking up on things too small for him to notice consciously, but he liked to think that his Dodge and Dot were guiding him and keeping him safe. His proclamation got some grumbling, but eventually his Vadikase nodded. Just in time, too, because the door they had come out of cracked open and Cass slipped out. She must have ran all the way from the other end of the compound to avoid risking Din hearing the door and getting curious. It was excessively cautious. It's not like they weren't allowed outside, but given what they were doing, Dick was grateful for the paranoia. Dick wouldn't admit it, but he held his breath along with his vote as she walked up to them. Cass tilted her head in a grin and pulled Din's laser sword from the back of her belt. Steph cheered, Jason straightened out of his slouch, and Tim gave a silent fist pump. Cass passed the laser sword over to Dick, and he carefully took the hilt, looking it over. This was the closest he'd ever gotten to it, and his Vadikase crowded around to see. The hilt was a compact rectangle, and it was weighty for its size. Dick supposed that made sense, considering it was holding components to make a laser sword. There was a switch in the middle, and Dick used that as a guide for finding the proper grip. He swung the hilt in a few practice slashes, his Vadikase backing away but watching eagerly. Once he was reasonably confident he was holding it correctly, Dick slid his thumb over the switch. Something told Dick to widen his stance and brace. And that was the only reason he didn't fall over when the sword ignited. Not because the sword was heavier than he'd expected, but because it was too light. The blade itself didn't seem to weigh anything. And maybe that made sense for a laser sword, but it still caught him off guard.
Whoa,
he breathed, easing out of his braced stance as he adjusted to the sword's odd balance. The unearthly blade was even more mesmerizing up close, absorbing and repelling light at the same time. Dick moved it idly back and forth, watching it crackle. It felt like Din a little, he realized as he carefully gave the sword a spin. It was an odd thought, and one he couldn't really explain, but it was true all the same, and the familiarity made it easier for him to fall into his stance and start, very, very slowly and carefully, moving through a sword form. Jaster was not having a good week. Well, honestly, he hadn't been having a good few years, but this week in particular had been trying. Vizsla kept slipping through his fingers, using his Hutun La sneak attacks and traps to pick off Jaster's people. They'd lost 3 Ha'ade in the last ambush alone. And now, when they were on the way to fulfill a contract on Korda 6 that would fund their efforts against Kirtzad, they'd had to delay their trip to follow rumors about a new group of Mando'ade that had popped up on a planet a few systems away. Normally, Jaster wouldn't bother, but you could never be too careful with Vizsla. This could be a fledgling Kirtzad outpost, a sign of Vizsla spreading his reach even further. Not on Jaster's watch. The determination to stop Vizsla did nothing to lessen the annoyance, though. And flying over mountains and woodlands searching for any sign of life had gotten old a dozen clicks ago. No one in town could tell them where the outpost might be set up. There were no settlements, no campsites, nothing at all indicated on any maps, and no one could even give them a solid answer about the direction the Mando'ade came from or left toward. Jaster sighed and activated his comm. "Anything?" he asked. He got a bunch of negative replies, culminating in Jango reporting,
"No signs of life, Boot Mandalore."
Jaster's lips quirked at the stumble. It was Jango's first time leading a fire team, and he'd been adjusting admirably.
"We're circling around the mountain," Jango continued. "Scanners aren't. Wait."
Jaster paused, hovering midair and automatically rotating so he was facing the mountain his odd was scouting.
"We've got life forms,"
Jango repeated, sounding excited.
6 of them. Humanoid."
That was the size of a fire team. Kirtzad was beginning to be more likely. "Do not engage," Jaster ordered, motioning to his team and jetting toward the mountain. "Try to remain hidden."
"We came around the mountain far enough away that I don't think they detected our Centrace, and we've taken cover."
"Jate," Jaster praised. "We'll be there in 4 minutes. Ralor, rendezvous with us to provide backup." Going in with 3 times more Verde than the enemy might be overkill, but he didn't know how many more might be hiding nearby. "Montross," he added to his second in command. "Take the rest of the teams back to the ship." The mountain was honestly too far away for a 4-minute flight, but Jaster was not about to leave his odd with only a few of his friends near a camp of potential Kirtzad, so they made it on time. Jango was crouched on a thick branch halfway up a massive tree. Jaster carefully maneuvered so he could land a few branches up without his Centra burning the tree. Sure enough, his scanners picked up on 6 lifeforms clustered together on the side of the mountain. "There must be a ledge," he muttered to himself. The whoosh of Centrace signaled Brelor and her team's arrival, and Jaster activated his comm. "On me," he ordered. "Weapons ready. Don't attack unless I give the signal. We don't know if they're Kirtzad." He leapt from the tree, propelling himself far enough away from the branches that he could safely activate his Centra. His Verde followed him, falling neatly into formation, while Bralor held back to provide reinforcements if this did turn out to be Kirtzad. The team swooped down. There was indeed a large ledge on the mountainside, too smooth and flat to be anything other than sentient made, or at least sentient augmented. The cluster of Mandoade whipped around when they came within hearing range. Potential odd present, Jaster said sharply as he spotted the small figure. It could just be a small species, but they were only wearing a helmet, and the others automatically closed ranks around them, so probably an odd. That made it less likely that this was Kirtzad, but not impossible. Vizsla had no respect for Ade, and would gladly use them as slaves or bait. Silas, one of Django's friends and teammates, gasped.
Mandalore,
he breathed.
The one in red and blue.
Jaster refocused and almost fell out of the sky as he saw the Mando Ad, who had been hidden at the back of the group, holding a black sword.
Is that?
Django gaped. Jaster cut his centra, landing on the ledge a little harder than he normally would. His Verde quickly formed up around him, weapons aimed steadily despite their palpable shock.
Tion Koya,
Jaster demanded as the Mando Ad in red and blue darted to the front of the group, blade replaced with a blaster.
How did you get the Da Carao? Who are we?
The tall Verde and tan Beskar Gam snarled, blaster pointing squarely at Jaster's throat.
Who the Kark are you?
Jaster tilted his head a little. Everyone in Kirtzad knew who he was. It could be a bluff, but as he took a closer look at the beings before him, he realized it wasn't just one odd. He knew how to see past Beskar Gam on many species, and these beings all looked young. He lowered his blaster just a little and heard his Verde do the same behind him.
Are you with Kirtzad?
He asked, watching the one with the Da Carao carefully. The group looked confused. Then a short Verde in green elbowed their way forward, dodging their Vod and Tan's attempt to grab them, though they remained behind the one in the red and blue.
Kirtzad was wiped out,
they said.
Have they come back?
From their height and the pitch of their voice, Jaster estimated they were around Django's age. Jaster narrowed his eyes. He had thought Kirtzad destroyed as well, but that didn't mean the Verde was being honest.
How did you get the Da Carao, if not from Kirtzad and Tor Vizsla?
He asked. There was a moment of silence. The Verdeca glanced back at their companions, then tilted their head at Jaster.
Tor Vizsla,
they said slowly.
Any relation to Pre-Vizsla?
That was an odd question.
Pre is Tor's odd,
Jaster replied warily. Where was this going? Could the Verde somehow know Pre-Vizsla, but not know Kirtzad still existed? The Verde and Tan reached for the Verdeca again, but they danced away, visor locked on Jaster.
Are you Jaster Mareel?
They asked, the strain in their voice audible even through the vocoder.
I am,
Jaster said. The Verdeca squeaked loudly, freezing on the spot. Jaster tensed a little. Would this be the revelation that turned this encounter into a fight? He hoped not. Not with the odd present. The Verde and Tan finally managed to grab the Verdeca's arm and drag them further into the cluster. From the way the rest of the group's heads twitched toward them, Jaster assumed the Verdeca was talking through internal comms. Guys, Tim exclaimed through their internal comms, that's Jaster Karking Mareel.
Who?
Everyone asked simultaneously. Tim flailed a little. There was so much his elite didn't know about their people's history. I think we got this backward, he said. I don't think we're in the future. I think we're in the past.
What?
Jaster Mareel was Mandalore a long time ago, like, he did some rapid counting. 50s BBY. He fought Kirtzad, a group of terrorists and extremists who didn't have any code of honor.
Are you sure it's the same guy?
Steph asked dubiously. Tim couldn't blame her. Being frozen in time in a JT temple while the galaxy moved on outside was one thing, but the temple somehow moving them back?
If one works, I guess,
Jason muttered. None of them had lowered their weapons, except for Tim, who decided talking without a blaster in hand might be more productive. The other Mandoade had lowered theirs slightly, but they were still ready to attack.
I guess,
Steph agreed.
Okay,
Dick breathed, his calm fuzzing a little with static. He never looked away from the Verde, his blaster never twitching.
Here's what we're gonna do. Cass, give Tim the laser sword. Tim, get it to Din. Let him and Bruce know what's going on.
Cass clicked her tongue once in agreement. A second later, Tim felt her hands on the back of his utility belt as she tucked the blade inside the large pouch at the small of his back. Dick had slipped it to her when the Mando Ade had first appeared, and they could only hope no one had noticed. Given that the leader, Jaster Muriel, had only looked at Dick while asking about the sword, their odds seemed good.
Perhaps it is unnecessary for Bruir and Bavuru to know that we took it,
Damien piped up, sounding uneasy. Cass clicked again. Tim was pretty sure the truth would come out, but there was a chance it wouldn't. A very small chance, but still a chance. So he wasn't about to disagree. Ready, he said. Dick straightened a little out of his ready stance and lowered his blaster an inch.
It seems there's been a misunderstanding,
he said smoothly.
We are not with Kirt Zod, and we have no quarrel with you. How about we all lower our weapons?
Muriel was silent for a long moment. Tim tensed as the pause stretched. Finally, though, Muriel nodded.
Together,
he agreed. Everyone slowly lowered their weapons. Dick holstered his blaster first, then Muriel did, then everyone else. Jason was the last to put his weapon away, and he was radiating unhappiness as he did so. Tim better make this fast.
Our Alora are inside,
Dick said, tilting his head toward the door behind them, where they wouldn't have to walk past the Verde.
I would like to send my Vod to fetch them.
The pause was brief this time, and Jaster nodded. Tim glanced at Dick, then eased his way out of the group, holding his hands at shoulder height and backing toward the door. When he was far enough away that backing up would have been strange, he turned and headed for the door, not making any sudden moves and ignoring the paranoia that was screaming that everyone could see the laser sword in his utility belt. No one stopped him, and he gently pulled open the door. As soon as it closed behind him, he fished the laser sword out of his utility belt and broke into a sprint. He knew he wasn't being stealthy, but that wasn't his goal. He raced into Din's room, flung the sword onto Din's bed where his armor was neatly laid out, and burst, well, as much as one could burst when there weren't any doors, into the second smaller room where Din was sitting on the floor, dabbling bubbles on Grogu's nose. Tim felt a bit bad for interrupting. Din's head snapped up, his eyes sharp and body tensing. What? He started, but Tim cut him off.
Bavadu,
he gasped.
We've been found. We were outside running katas, and a bunch of Mando Ade flew up on Centrase.
Din had already jumped to his feet. Tim followed him back into the main room.
They thought we were part of a terrorist group they're fighting. Dick called a ceasefire and sent me to get you and Bu'ir,
he continued, fumbling a little when Din pressed Grogu into his arms. Get him dressed, Din ordered, grabbing his cuirass. Tim dried Grogu off as quickly as he could without giving the Ikad rug burn. Grogu went along willingly, cooing worriedly. They didn't hurt any of you, Din asked as he bent to attach his greaves.
No,
Tim said.
Once we said we weren't part of the terrorist group Kirt Zod, they didn't seem to want to fight.
Good. Din fastened his utility belt and hooked the laser sword onto it.
Bavadu, I think we got the JT magic backward,
Tim said rapidly, pulling Grogu's robe over his head and helping him find the armholes.
I think we're in the past, not the future. I read about Kirt Zod when I was learning about Mandalore, and one of the people who fight them was Mandalore Jaster Muriel. The man outside said his name is Jaster Muriel, and there were some other things that lined up. I think we're in the 50s BBY.
Din grunted in acknowledgement, pulling on his helmet.
Take Grogu and get your Bu'ir,
he said, striding for the door. Tim scooped Grogu up and raced for the other end of the compound. Chapter 2. The strange Verde hadn't said anything since sending off the one in green, though Jaster was pretty sure they were talking over internal comms. He took the opportunity to check in with his Verde. Rowler's team had done further scans of the area and hadn't found any other beings. That was good, but they didn't know how many might be inside the mountain. The scanners built into their Bouchesse weren't strong enough to see through the thick stone, and they couldn't fetch a large scanner without risking the other Mando Ade noticing. Django's team was behind his own, closer to the edge of the mountain. They had been providing air support, but landed when everyone sheathed their weapons.
"Do you think they're telling the truth, Alor?"
Django asked. Jaster hesitated before answering. "I am very curious to hear how they have the Dak Hadao, but they haven't made any offensive moves, only defensive. And the Verdeca in green seemed genuinely surprised to hear who I was. It's possible that from one of the Rogue Ad Elite and haven't been paying attention to Mando Ad politics."
"They knew Pre Vizsla,"
Django reminded him. "But not Tor," Jaster said. It was certainly a bizarre assortment of knowledge to have, if they were telling the truth. "Does anyone recognize their clan signet?" he asked. A momentary pause, then Django's friend Miles spoke up.
"Looks like a Minok, Mandalore, though I don't know of any clan that uses that signet."
Jaster hummed an acknowledgement. The door the Verdeca had slipped through swung open, and immediately everyone was on alert again, hands hovering over their weapons. A Mando Ad in unpainted Beskar Gam emerged, striding purposely toward them, their own hand hovering above the grip of their blaster. Jaster didn't recognize them. The Mando Ad glanced at each of their clan members, checking them over, then planted themselves directly between the two groups. Jaster's eyes were drawn to their belt, where the Dak Hadao was somehow hanging. The one in red and blue must have passed the weapon off to the one in green without any of his Verde noticing. "Clever Verdecase," he murmured, before activating his external comms and saying,
"Sukhoi-Gar. Sukhoi-Gar,"
the Mando Ad replied warily. Over the internal comms, Jaster's teammate Baveen said,
"They reference multiple Alore. Keep an eye out for the other."
Jaster smiled at his Verde's competence.
"We heard reports that there were Mando Ade in this area,"
he told the unknown Alore.
"Are you affiliated with Kirt Zad?"
"Naish,"
they said, speaking with a calm confidence that Jaster was inclined to believe.
"Then how did you come to be in possession of the Dak Hadao?"
he pressed. The Mando Ad paused. The door in the mountainside burst open, and Jaster quickly raised his hand in a quelling motion, anticipating that the surprise might shock Django and the other young Verde into drawing their weapons. A large Mando Ad raced out of the doorway, the Verdeca in green close on his heels, carrying, Jaster squinted, an Ikad. Well, that was a point for not Kirt Zad. Unlike the first Alor, the second barely gave Jaster and his Verde a glance before hurrying over to their clan members and searching them for injuries. The Alor and unpainted Beskar sighed almost inaudibly. Jaster raised one eyebrow, a smile tugging at the corner of his mouth. He was getting an inkling of how these Mando Ade were related. Though the two Alore hadn't exchanged vambraces, it was possible they simply didn't practice that tradition. Only when the second Alor was satisfied that no one was hurt, did they join their fellow Alor in front of Jaster.
"Sukhoi-Gar,"
Jaster said again.
"Sukhoi-Gar,"
the new Alor said. Their armor was painted a dark green, matching only the paint on their fellow Alor's armor, a set of jade eyes.
"Nergai Jaster Muriel,"
Jaster said, deciding to include some pleasantries before diving back into questioning. Plus, if he could learn these Mando Ade's clan and house, it would be easier to identify their loyalties. He pulled off his boucher, tucking it under his arm. "Clan and House Muriel. Mandalore. He, him." There was a moment's pause.
"I am called Dral Ghanae,"
the Alor with unpainted Beskar Gam said.
"He, him." "Darpan,"
the second Alor said.
"He, him."
Neither moved to remove their bouchesse. Jester's eyes shot up even as he nodded in understanding. Traditionalists. That could certainly help explain their spotty information. "You said you're not affiliated with Kirt Zad," he said. "Could you explain how you came in possession of the Dak Hadao?"
"What makes you think I have the Dak Hadao?"
Dral Ghanae replied steadily. Jaster couldn't help the snort that escaped him. Your Ade are clever, getting it back to you without us noticing, he said, taking a glance at their clan structure. But we saw them using it when we were flying in. The Allure stiffened. Their clan members visibly cringe. Ha. Jaster fought down a grin. Definitely Ade.
I won the Dakarau in a fight against an Arureti,
Dragone explained stiffly.
I don't know how he got it.
Jaster straightened. He hadn't heard anything about Vizsla losing the Dakarau. But then again, he wouldn't advertise that it was gone, given that his entire claim as Mandalore was based on his possession of the weapon. If he could advertise that Vizsla no longer had the Dakarau, he might finally get the support of the more reticent clans. And if he had the support of the new wielder... Do you plan to claim the position of Mandalore? He asked. These Mando Ade might not be Kirt Zad, but they were traditionalists. While Jaster and most of the Ha'ade didn't put much stock in the Dakarau's power, traditionalists very well could. To his surprise, Dragone scoffed.
Naish,
he said, with much more passion than Jaster anticipated.
I don't want to be a Mandalore. I am a Bear Uya and have an elite to care for.
Well, that was a relief. Jaster smiled at the Mando Ade. I'm glad to hear that, he said honestly. Dragone eyed him, shifting warily.
If you challenge me for the Dakarau, I'll accept,
he told him.
I would just ask for the fight to be until surrender, not death.
Jaster blinked. He didn't like the resigned set to the man's shoulders, as if he expected Jaster to kill him for the weapon regardless. Clearly there had been a misunderstanding. I have no desire to challenge you, he said. Dragone's head jerked in clear shock.
You don't?
He finally asked. Jaster shook his head. I and most of those who follow me don't put much stock in the power of a sword to denote government, he said, a bit dryly. I was elected. I don't need to prove my claim. Dragone sagged a little in relief, as did the rest of his elite. Jaster hadn't noticed quite how close to violence the Ade had been until they weren't anymore, as focused on the Ilore as he had been. Seeing his Verde relax in turn showed that he wasn't the only one who hadn't noticed, though. Jaster felt a little bad about what he was going to say next. However, the Mando Ade stiffened right back up again. Jaster was quick to finish his sentence. There are a number of clans that have refrained from joining the Ha'ade or Kirt Zad, waiting to see who will be successful. If I had the support of the wielder of the Dakarau, they may join us. Dragone looked at him for a long moment.
What are you proposing?
He finally asked. Reports of your presence only go back a few months, Jaster said promptly. My assumption is that you're new to the area. My second assumption is that this compound, which is clearly ancient, is not particularly comfortable. I would offer you a place on Concord Dawn, where the Hu'ade are based. We are in the process of expanding anyway, and we have a number of clan compounds you can choose from. In exchange, I would ask that you attend a few meetings, showing that you are the new wielder of the Dakarau and that I have your support. If you are not interested, we will leave you in peace and not bother you again. We will tell no one of your location. There was a moment of silence.
I would need to discuss it with my elite,
Dragone said slowly. Of course, Jaster agreed easily. What say we reconvene in 2 hours?
That would be sufficient.
Excellent. Jaster pulled his boucher back on.
I look forward to hearing your answer.
With a final nod, he turned back to his Verde, making the hand signal to form up in the air. The hiss whoosh of a dozen Centrace filled the air, and he took off, heading for the other side of the mountain. It wasn't worth the distance or fuel to go all the way back to the ship, but he didn't want the elite to feel rushed or crowded. The delay would allow them time to rest and eat, and he could contact Montrose to work out the potential change of plans. If Dragone agreed, Jaster wouldn't be wasting his time on a simple contract. He'd be heading right back to Concord Dawn to finally strike a major blow against Vizsla. Montrose could handle the contract. He'd even let Django go along, if the odd insisted, even if he'd planned to be present for Django's first time leading a unit. It was a milk run anyway, with low risk and a high chance for success. He'd be doing more to protect his odd by working to end Kirt Zad. We'll be right back. The dozen verde disappeared from view. Din slowly turned to look at his elite. Dick was staring right back. Jason had his arms folded and his boucher tilted stubbornly toward the ground, and the rest of them were trying to hide behind their taller vode.
Inside, Bruce growled.
The Ade hightailed it inside. Din looked at his vod. Bruce was opening and closing his fists in time to deep, calming breaths. He was muttering rapidly under his breath. Din shifted a bit closer and heard,
"You love your Ade. You don't believe in punishment spars. You love your Ade. You do not believe in punishment spars, even if they're being decouté and could use some sense knocked into them."
Din snorted. Bruce looked at him.
"I'd be taking their weapons and their carking bouchese if we were in a secure location,"
he said. Din hummed.
"If Jaster's offer is legitimate, you may still get the chance,"
he said. Bruce's shoulders shifted thoughtfully.
"Do you think it is?"
Din tilted his head from side to side.
"I want to hear what Natra thinks, and what Vorpahn knows about Mareel, but I'm inclined to. He seemed genuine." "Well,"
Bruce rode his shoulders a little.
"Let's go ask them." "After we're done lecturing them?"
Din asked wryly.
"Obviously."
The Ade had clustered in the largest room of the compound, which they'd been using as a sort of entertainment and training room. A Kubikod board had been scratched into the stone in one corner, the few chairs the compound boasted were scattered around, and some of the Ade had gone and collected armfuls of pine needles to form other makeshift seating. None of the Ade were taking advantage of these amenities, clustered together tightly in the middle of the room. They'd removed their bouchese, and six pairs of eyes locked onto Din and Bruce as they entered. Grogu was still in Tim's arms. He looked around the group, obviously sensing the tension. He squirmed, and after a moment, Tim caved and put him down. Grogu waddled over to Din, ducking behind his legs and peering out his bavode. Din attached his own boucher to his belt and folded his arm, staring the Ade down. The tension grew until finally Damien spoke up from behind Jason. "It was Timothy's idea." Tim bristled. The others opened their mouths, and Din really wasn't in the mood to get pelted with a bunch of excuses. "Gev," he snapped. The Ade froze. "It doesn't matter whose idea this was. You all participated." Their eyes skittered away guiltily.
"You realize this could have gone much, much worse," Bruce asked. "If Mareel did care about the Da Kadao, he could have killed your Babadu, or whichever one of you was holding it at the time."
The Ade flinched. Bruce took a deep breath, clearly trying to let go of the fear of his chest, the thought of waking up to find his Ade dead because he hadn't been paying attention. "I was the one using it," Dick said quietly, meeting their gazes steadily. "The others didn't. Ne paravu, takisi." Din looked at the others, raising an eyebrow. "Is that true?" He knew it wasn't the whole truth, but he wanted to see if they'd admit it. If not, he and Bruce would have bigger problems than a stupid stunt. Jason shifted, then finally looked up from the floor, glowering.
"Technically," he said. "That's because Dick wouldn't let us touch it before he figured out if it was safe."
"We were all planning on using it," Steph agreed, glancing up at them before looking away. "He went first because he has the best instinct for new weapons." Tim, Damien, and Cass nodded, and they all muttered their own apologies.
"Well, that was something. If they were going to do something stupid, at least they went about it in a not entirely stupid way." "It was foolish," Din said firmly. "You could have easily hurt yourself. I've burned myself on the Da Kadao before, and that's with pure Beskar Gom. You could have easily lost a limb." "We have rules around the use of an unfamiliar weaponry for a reason," Bruce added. He looked at his older children. "You have all passed your Vergotene. You know better." He looked at Damien. "And even though you have not passed your Vergotene, you know better." He folded his arms. "Clearly you all need some remedial training."
The Ade's faces fell. Jason looked like he was about to groan before he caught Din's eyes and swallowed the complaint. Going through beginner katas while getting your form nitpicked for hours wasn't fun, but that was the whole point. It wasn't like Din and Bruce didn't have better things to do either.
"And none of you will be touching the Da Kadao unless you have my explicit permission," Din said, meeting all of their eyes. Tylee Bach? Elek Alor, the Ade murmured. Good. Din glanced at Bruce, who nodded. Your Buir and I will discuss this more later. For now, we have a deadline. Tim, what do you know about Mareel? Tim straightened, his hands still twisting together nervously. He was Mandalore in 50s BBY, in one of the main groups fighting for control of Mandalore. He was mostly fighting Kirt Zod because they were actual terrorists, but he opposed Etvart Zod too. Do you think we can trust his word? Tim thought about it. If what I read about him was true, he said, the records were incomplete. Etvart Zod didn't want people thinking about their opposition, so they destroyed a lot. But there were several fragments talking about honor being important to him and his faction. And my parents had the information locked up real securely, so it wasn't the Empire's version of events. Din nodded.
And what did you think of him? Bruce asked Cass. Did his offer seem genuine?
Cass nodded. Didn't want sword, she signed. Honestly offered home.
All right, Din said, sitting down on one of the chairs and gesturing for his Ade to follow suit.
He scooped Grogu up and settled the Ikad on his lap.
Let's go over our options. What would be the benefits of accepting Mareel's offer? Bruce asked.
The Ade exchanged glances. We'd have a proper house instead of a glorified cave system, Steph offered. It'd be more comfortable, warmer, and we'd have better access to food, water, and other supplies.
We'd be around other Mando Ade, Damien added. We would stand out less and could form alliances to protect ourselves better.
Safer between jobs, Cass signed. Better for Grogu and Damien. Being around other Mando Ade would let us learn more about our culture firsthand, Tim said.
And we could learn new combat styles from them, Jason added.
If Mareel wants a show of support from you, Dick said slowly, our position would likely remain secure for a while. And if he's as honorable as the records say, he won't turn us out even when he doesn't need your support anymore.
It could also give you the chance to join a school, Bruce said, glancing over his younger Ade.
It had been a while since they'd had that opportunity. Ever since the covert had been destroyed, Bruce had been keeping up their educations as well as he could, but it was difficult to balance alongside hunting for bounties and constantly traveling.
Din nodded. All good points, he said. Having a safe place to stay would also let us focus on getting our bearings in this time. What would be the problems with accepting the offer?
We don't know for sure if Mareel is trustworthy, Dick said promptly. It could be a trap of some sort.
Even if it's not a trap, he doesn't follow the way, Jason pointed out.
We would be around other Mando Ade, yes, but if they don't respect our beliefs, that could be more of a problem than a benefit. He wants you to show him public support, Steph said, looking at Din. That means his enemies might target you. Kirt Zod might try to take the Dak Hadao, or Evert Zod might target you to reduce Marilla's chances of overthrowing them.
Secrecy is survival, Cass agreed solemnly. He might expect more than he's saying, Damien said slowly. What if he wants you to swear loyalty to him, instead of just standing beside him with the Dak Hadao?
We'd have less flexibility, Din added. Being on an organized planet means getting approval for flight paths and takeoffs. Even if no one targets Din directly, they could launch an attack on the planet, Bruce said heavily. We would be willingly entering a territory under civil war.
Din tilted his head in acknowledgement. Tim, do you know if there were any recorded attacks on Concord Dawn? Tim scrunched his face in thought. I don't know. I don't remember the planet being mentioned in any records, but that could just mean the reports of attacks were destroyed, he finally said. He bit his lip and looked down.
Ne paravu.
Din shook his head.
No, that's not your fault. You helped us a lot today with what you do know.
Tim brightened a little.
Any other downsides? Bruce asked.
The Ade frowned in thought, shaking their heads one by one. Tim cleared his throat a little. If we have traveled to the past, there might currently be two Dak Hadaosai, he said quietly. If Vizsla still has his, Mareel might think we were trying to deceive him.
They all considered that for a moment. We can't know that's true until Vizsla shows himself,
Bruce decided. We've already established that Din won the Da Kat Au from an Arati and don't know where he got it, so we can stick to that story. Muriel may even be happy to hear there are two, as it further weakens Vizsla's claim. Din nodded. We will cross that bridge if we come to it. He agreed. Bruce and Din exchanged looks. They had time before Muriel returned. We should eat before they return, Bruce said, standing. They didn't have much, just ration bars and a few nuts and berries scavenged from the forest, but it would renew their strength and clear their minds. He looked at each of his Ade. Use this time to think about our options. Your Babaru and I will take your opinions into account when making our final decision. When the 2 hours were over, Jester arrived back on the ledge with his and Django's fire teams. He decided against leaving Django's team behind. The traditionalists were deservedly jumpy, and he didn't want them worrying about where half his Verde might have gone. Rallar and her team were still out of sight, though they had been joined by the shuttle he'd ordered to make transporting the Mando Ade to the ship easier if they accepted his offer. The Elite was waiting for him.
Sukhoi Gar,
he said, pulling off his bouchet and smiling at them. Have you made a decision?
We have a few questions, if that's all right,
Darpan said. Jester nodded. Of course. They could be planning to get intelligence on him or Concord Dawn to relay to Kirt Zad, but he didn't think so. He was a decent judge of character, and the traditionalist Mando Ade seemed genuine.
If we were to join you on your planet, we would be putting ourselves in the midst of a three-way civil war,
Darpan said.
How can we know Concord Dawn is safe for our elite?
A reasonable question, if one of the more suspicious ones they could have asked. Jester's Verde didn't move, but he knew them well enough to sense their unease. Avart Zad have no spine or teeth, Jester said. They are so devoted to their peace that they have melted their best gargam and destroyed their weapons. The Mando Ade jerked, their body language screaming in horror at the idea. Jester nodded grimly. We don't have to fear an attack from that flank, he said. They will happily commit genocide in every other way, but they refuse to sully their hands with killing. Darpan visibly shook himself.
And Kirt Zad.
They have attacked Concord Dawn once, Jester said honestly. Before the Hu'ade built our compounds there. They were soundly defeated, to the point we thought them destroyed for many years. We now have many layers of defense to detect any attacks that may approach the planet, including scanners, checkpoints, and Verde stationed in every town. That was all basic information, the kind that any enemy would assume, so there was no danger in sharing it. But it may be enough to convince them. Darpan inclined his head in thanks. His fellow Alor spoke up next.
Would I have to swear allegiance to you as part of these meetings and displays?
Jester had considered that. But he didn't want the man to feel pressured. He wasn't Vizsla. He wanted his people to choose him voluntarily. If he did his job well as Mandalore, they may one day choose to swear allegiance themselves. Until that day, he would not require it. No, he said. I will not require your oath. Only your presence. Dragonne looked at him consideringly.
A final question,
Darpan interjected.
We follow the way. We have no quarrel with those who do not. Would those on Concord Dawn take issue with us?
No, Jester said immediately. This answer easy. We have some traditionalist elite on Concord Dawn already. Your way would be respected. The Mando Ade seemed pleased, but still wary. Jester couldn't blame them. All Mando Ade were seen as strange throughout the galaxy, and traditionalists even more so. He had seen the harassment some of his traditionalist Verde faced. We haven't had any trouble in the past, he added. But if anyone does give you trouble, you may report it to any of my Verde or me directly, and we will put a stop to it. The Mando Ade straightened a little, inclining their helmets in a gesture of gratitude and respect. Do you have any more questions? Jester asked. The Alori glanced at each other briefly.
No,
Dragonne said. Jester nodded. I would be willing to swear to everything I have said, he offered. I would appreciate it if you would swear that you are accepting my offer in good faith and do not mean any harm to the Hu'ade or the people of Concord Dawn. There was a moment's pause as the Allure presumably checked in with their elite over internal comms. Jaster waited patiently. It was a good Allure who made sure their dependents were comfortable before swearing any oath, even one as simple as this.
We are willing,
Darpan said. Jaster inclined his head solemnly. Then as Mandalore, I hereby swear that all I have told you is true. I offer you a clan compound on the planet of Concord Dawn, which is highly defended from outside attack, in exchange for your appearance at my side as wielder of the Da Kadao. You will not be forced to swear allegiance to me, and your way will be respected. Hu Aja Hait. Dragonet stepped forward a little.
As Allure of my clan, I hereby swear that we accept this offer in good faith and do not mean any harm to the Hu'ade or the people of Concord Dawn. Hoot, Ija, Hai,
the whole elite chorus. Jaster solemnly clasped forearms with Dragonet and Darpan and nodded to the rest of the elite. Then he stepped back and grinned. Ola Rogue, do you need any help packing? The end. Author's notes. I've been experimenting with the Mandoa names for the different factions of the Mandalorians, since technically only Kyrt Zadd has an official translation. Hu'ade is a pretty established fanon for true Mandalorians. I like that a lot and it makes sense, so we're leaving that one alone. For the new Mandalorians, I've seen Evar Mandoade and Evar La Mandoade, which are both pretty direct translations. They're clunky, though, so I considered cutting them to Evar Ade. However, it occurred to me that the other Mandalorian factions, who use Mandoa a lot more than the new Mandalorians, if I recall correctly, widely consider the new Mandalorians Darmanda. So would they really have their Mandoa name include Mandoade or Ade? I don't think so. So I decided to use the Zadd suffix, which means group slash alliance slash society, also used by Kyrt Zadd, to make Evart Zadd. Finally, the old Mandalorians, those who were kicked off Mandalore by the new Mandalorians, but instead of fighting back like Kyrt Zadd or the Hu'ade, just sit left entirely and form their own groups on other planets, is a pretty straightforward translation. Rugade. Rug means old, and they still uphold Mandalorian tradition, so I think they'd keep the Ade suffix. I decided to leave off the adjective suffix la in both Evart Zadd and Rugade, because they do the same thing with Hu'ade, and it makes them less clunky. Podficker's notes. The author does mention in the original author notes why they had used a different form or a different word for a cousin, which was Juvad, and they had gotten that from a website. But I use a Mandoa dictionary, and Bavad or Bavare is cousin. And so I just used that because otherwise the fic is like really good with proper Mandalorian language structure, all of that. Like, the author does such an incredible job. But because they call their uncle Babadu, and I figured it would just be best if they're using the traditional term for uncle to use the traditional term for cousin. So that's just kind of what I chose to do. And I hope that that's okay. I'm really sorry if it's not to the author. It's a little thing of mine. Like, I just wanted it to be consistent, I guess. So, but yeah, that's it. So the end for real, and thanks. Bye.